This is Del Bice from the Yakima Valley Museum and Historical Association, and I have here Jess Lindemann from Lindex Corporation, and we're going to reminisce about Lindemann Power and Equipment and John Deere in the Yakima Valley. I'll start off by, Jess, your name is J-E-S-S-E, and most people would call it Jesse, but most people call you Jess, which do you...
Nickname, yeah, short.
So Jess is, yeah. And what's the G stand for?
George.
George, okay.
An uncle.
All right. You're from Iowa.
Yeah, Atlantic, Iowa.
Now, where is Atlantic?
It's about halfway between Omaha, Nebraska and Des Moines, Iowa. In southwestern Iowa.
Southwestern. That would put it, what, about 150 miles in between, right there?
No. It's 55 miles east of Omaha and about 80 west of Des Moines. They're that close together.
They're that close together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And when were you born?
October 12th, 1899.
Well, you're going to hit three centuries.
Yes.
All right. Whereabouts? At Atlantic?
Yes.
And tell us something about your family history. Your mother and father, where were they from?
Well, their parents all were immigrants from Germany, and they came to Noble Township, which was south of Atlantic, in the next township, and when that was just prairie. And my grandfather bought on the Lindemann side, bought 160 acres down there, $1 an acre. And raised a family. He had first five sons, about 2 years plus or minus 2 months apart. My father used to tell, then he decided that his wife needed some help in the house, so he had five daughters again.
Five sons first, and then
five daughters
in a row?
And the daughters were 2 years apart plus or minus 2 months. He had 10 children. They all lived in their 80s.
My Lord.
Yeah.
And
they all were hard workers, so hard work didn't seem to hurt them any.
When did you come to Yakima?
I first got into the Army in 1918, the spring of 1918. I was 18 years old the fall before. And when I got out, I thought I wanted to see the world, and I had an uncle up at Ellensburg. So I came out in December 1919 and started working in Yakima for a lumber company, the first working day, the first or second or third of January, whichever is the first Monday in 1920, and I've been here ever since.
All right, did any of the other family come out with you?
Not with me, but a year later, my brother Harry came out, and then in 1925, a brother Ross came out, and in 34, my brother Joe, whom you knew, came out. He was much younger than we
were. Joe must have been the youngest then.
Yes, he was. He was 13 years, 12 or 13 years younger. It all depends on when you younger than I. I'm the only one left out of the boys.
Out of five?
Four boys and two girls.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, did your dad come out too?
Well, dad and mother, they still had the farm in Iowa, and they came out. They decided to retire, and the whole family were here, so they came out in 1941, and both passed away in the late 50s.
All right, then give us some history of Lindemann Power and Equipment.
First started out strangely. We were working for Robie Glummer Company, and they had an implement line, Moline Plow Company implement line, and they had front wheel, big wheel drive tractor. And we tried to adapt it to the orchard, so we built a disc air, I did, down at Robie Lumber Company in 1922.
Now this is Robie Lumber Company?
Yes.
And that was a predecessor to Robie Fuel Company?
Well, yes.
That would be Jack Robie?
Jack Robie's father and uncle had Robie Lumber Company. I saw Jack just not long ago. And then they went out of business in 1922. Oh, and then I had built this disc harrow, and first built a ditcher furrower, horse-drawn furrower, believe it or not, in 1921, roving down there, and we sold six of them. I got a picture someplace of them, and all lined up, and it worked. So then tractor-wise, they were selling a lot of T-tracks here, so we got the agency for the Holt tractor 2-ton. You've got two of them.
I've got two of them here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And we sold three of them. And then
What year would that be?
That would be 1921, probably.
That's before Caterpillar, of course.
Yes, so yes. The agency was gotten for Rovig Lumber Company. And they were sold by Rovig Lumber Company.
Okay, so Rovig, under their name, they
yes.
had the...
Then they went out of business in the fall of 22, and my brother and I had $158, and we bid in the repair parts that were up at the sheriff's auction, the Moline Plow Company deal, and that started us in business. And then in 1925, Caterpillar Tractor was organized, combined Best Tractor, CL Best Company, and the Caterpillar, the Holt Caterpillar Tractor Company, in 1925, and they wanted us to be dealers in the area, but they wanted so much we didn't have the money to take on the dealership. They wanted $50,000, incidentally. We didn't have $500 we could put in there. So we took on the T-track line then, and did very well with it until they came out this new model and did awfully well with it. Until the start of the Depression, two things happened. Nobody could pay us our accounts receivable, and the truck system started going bad on them. And they never did correct it before we finally gave it up.
Let's reminisce a little bit about Cleveland Tractor Company. Can you tell us something about them?
Cleveland Tractor Company was started by a Rollin K. White, who was a member of the White family, a white truck, white sewing machine. But he was a sort of a maverick, and he went off and started what they first called the Cleveland Motor Plow. He incorporated a plow onto the back of a small crawler tractor. But it was not too much of a success, but he continued to build the tractors. But he was an impractical fellow, and he had a beautiful plant in Cleveland, Ohio, where we visited one time. But they finally were washed out, but they had they had all the small crawler tractor business in California and here. They just did a land office business, but they would not correct. In other words, if Mr. White decided that they were going to build this thing upside down, they'd build it upside down, regardless of whether it worked or not.
How many models were they building about that time?
Well, they first built the Model R, which was for Rollin, his first name. Then they built a Model K for King White, his son. And then they came out later on, after we quit T-Track, Valley Ironworks took it over with a Model A. And soon thereafter, I think they went out of business.
Valley Ironworks, you say, took over T-Track.
Yeah,
about when?
Because we started building the John Deere crawler, the first ones, the Model GPs. And we had so much trouble with T-Track that we just gave it up. They did buy about $3,000-$4,000 worth of parts off us, and that was a very happy day for us when we got rid of it.
This would be about 1932, 1933?
Long in there, yes.
Yeah.
Early part of the Depression, yeah.
You sold these Cleatrax mainly to
orchardists.
Yes.
And they were low, easily handled. They were an ideal tractor for the orchard if the Cleveland people had just paid attention to the problems and corrected them. It was just the right size and tractor for the and low down, easy to handle on the side hills, and it was just and it was the only tractor in those days had a power takeoff, which led us to build the power takeoff sprayers, which were the first that we know of that were ever built that you saw at the museum the other day.
Yeah, those are the ones you put the front pumps on.
That's right.
Well, now Cleatrax was building a Model E about that time too, weren't they?
Well, that was we put it in 1940 or 41.
30 or 31.
No, let's see. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, 30 or 31.
31. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So okay, what came after that? Yeah. E was that Weidman. Gerritsen's had one, I remember.
Okay. I think I got an E out here, too.
An E?
Uh-huh.
Have you?
Yeah. And an old junker. what were you building at Lindeman? Was it called Lindeman Power and Equipment then?
Yes. First we called it the Holt Tractor Agency. We have a picture someplace when we started over at 4th and Walnut.
Where did you start?
4th and Walnut Street.
4th and Walnut.
Yes, the corner of the Lucy building. I forget what's in there now.
And that would be down...
Just next to Creamery. Creamery's across...
Well, 4th Avenue.
4th Avenue, yes.
Oh, yeah. Now, wasn't there an old building in there that Fred Redman owned for years? Just a little bit south of that? He stored his cars there, right across from the Creamery.
I know what that is. That's the old Schichtel Brothers garage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's probably what that was.
So this is 4th Avenue and Walnut.
Yes.
Was where you started.
Yeah.
And how long were you there?
Until 1925. We started there in 23 and moved down to what we call the Gerritsen Building, which is now the Johnson Glass Building on South First Street. In 1925.
Now Johnson Glass, that's just on South First.
Yeah. Lloyd Gerritsen owned the building at that time.
Oh, he did?
Mm-hmm. His daughter used to collect the rent from us when young Garrett, what's his name in the Lower Valley? Garrett...
Horsley?
Horsley married Helen Well, he would be now 25, 26, 27. He'd be 60 years old, wouldn't he?
Garrett Horsley.
The baby.
Garrett Horsley, yeah. Garrett's probably 62 or 3.
Well,
somewhere
he was
there.
The baby.
Yeah.
She used to set him on the counter while she waited till I wrote the check for the rent. She was quite a gal. So.
Now, that was Helen Gerritsen.
Yes.
That married Frank Horsley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, his father's name was Garrett, too.
Oh.
Frank Horsley was the grandfather of this fellow, be 62 years old.
Yeah, it would be Gerritsen. Yeah. But of course they call him, his name is Gerritsen Horsley.
Yeah, oh, that's where the Garrett, never put those two together.
Well, Gerritsen Horsley.
Of course.
And
Well, his father was not Garrett, and his father was, could have been Frank. I don't remember what his father was.
Sears
Horsley was the father.
Yeah.
Sears Horsley knew he and Helen quite well. We used to go to dances together.
Okay, so you're on the south. So that was quite a small building, though, really.
Yes.
For manufacturing. And how long were you there?
Well, until we bought this property down where what is now called the John Deere Building on South First Street, farther on down South First Street, and moved built the first section in look out now, 1929, right when the Depression started. And moved the winter of 1929-1930. We moved in there.
All right. What did you build first?
Did
you build that brick building, the one that had the big Lindeman Power and Equipment Company
sign?
Yeah. That was the first
150. Then we added on two sections to the north later on.
Well, that's a pretty good sized building for you.
Yes. It was a nice big building.
Yes.
But we were building a hell of a string of stuff.
Okay, what were you building then?
Well, we were building two different disc harrows, a disc furrower, a tractor brush rake, a offset wheel trailer for hauling fruit out of the orchard behind the tractor. Stationary sprayers.
That was a 1,000-gallon tank?
Yeah. And I think we ultimately went to a 1,200-gallon. And then three sizes of tractor-drawn power takeoff sprayers.
Oh.
Two of them are down there. The 800 was the third one. There's a 400 and a 600 down there.
So you built 400, 600, and 800. Yeah. The 400 was basically a hop sprayer.
Yeah.
And these were all steel.
All steel, yeah.
And you used the friend pump on all of them?
Yes.
What about discs?
Well, we first built this one that you saw down there, an extension disc to go out mm-hmm. under. We built that for that Moline tractor at Ruby Number. I built that in 20, got a patent on it. Wasn't worth papers written on probably, but it had a blue ribbon on it. That's what everybody's looking for. In 1922, I was 22 years old, and boy, I knew all there was to know about building a disc era. Yeah, I tell you, you blush when you think back and remember what you knew and you didn't know.
All right, with that disc that we looked at a couple weeks ago at the Ag Museum, would that be one of the first ones?
That's right. That's right.
So that would be a disc from the 20s.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
Well, that's very important.
Then about 19, probably 1928 or 1930, we built. I'd seen the offset counter disc in California, and we started building offset discs, and we built quite a few of those.
Was that incorporated in the Deere's line later on, or was this something you...
No, Deere never built that because they already were building an offset disc in
Killifer, yeah, L.A.
Yeah, no, they never... Edwards took over the stuff that Deere didn't want and got it for nothing, finally. He supposedly paid so much money and never did, and then he was killed, and they never tried to...
He went to Lake Michigan, wasn't that, or Lake Erie, or what?
No, they were killed between Spokane and Spokane.
On the airplane?
He'd been back to Detroit.
Oh, okay.
To Ford on a plow deal or something like that. But the thing we were talking about was...
building in that...
Deere let him have it with the provision that he would furnish repair parts for all that stuff. He took over the disc fur or the whole deal down the line. And continued building a disc there, the offset disc. Mm-hmm. And then we had made an individual blade. One day I'm going to build a big one if I live long enough for the Challenger 65. If you may have seen this disc here, each blade has its own bearing, like a disc ball. Only stand up straight and you've got them in a row, front row and a back row, and they're clear up against the tractor.
Well, of course, that's like that Edwards.
The Edwards is our.
Standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We built that, you see, and that's okay. One of the things that Edwards built after he took it. About that, yeah.
I remember those standards were in the John Deere book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All for repairs.
Yeah, for repairs. I remember that. And then Edwards is still building them, too, by the way.
Yes.
And they're still.
They were an excellent hop disc.
Yeah.
It's the one disc here at first that the little old Ferguson tractor could lift.
Right, they could put four blades on and four blades in.
Whatever you want to, on a square bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me today, of course, they've got these, like California in particular, these huge disc carriers that they pull behind a D6, let's say for instance. But my God, and they've got transport wheels on them, but you've got a fortune invested in all that stuff, where if they had that same principle right up close to the back of the tractor.
But just put maybe a 30-inch blade or something on it.
26 or 24, whatever. And bring up the ends of a couple of hydraulic cylinders, which they do with a pull bind. It would enhance the value of the Challenger 60, the use of the Challenger, because you could go out of the gate and go down the road and not have to. Of course, you can do that with the transport wheels they have in these other ones. My God, the length of the hoses they have on that stuff to raise the wheels and change the angle of the disc carrier, it's terrific. It's just cumbersome and very, very costly. You could save so damn much money.
Well, it's like all these fuel cultivators now. They've got hoses and cylinders sticking out so far.
It's a nightmare.
So when you were moved down to your new building, that was the list of what you were making down there. How many brothers were out here then?
Three of us.
Three.
Yeah.
Harry, Ross, and you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there's a picture...
But then Joe came out
in 34.
Yeah.
So
right,
Harry, Ross, and then Joe. So the four of you, by 1934, you were all here in Yakima and working at...
Yes, except in the meantime, Harry was killed in an automobile wreck in 1930 over Wenatchee. Oh. We had a branch, retail branch over Wenatchee. And in 1929, April 1930. He was killed in an automobile wreck. And he was just a year and a month younger than I.
Well, what was this retail branch? What were you doing up in Wenatchee?
T-Track.
Pardon?
We bought the T-Track dealership over there.
Oh, so...
And did very well. It's quite hilly. All the orchards are quite hilly. So, of course, no wheel trackers could handle it before that because you had the steel wheel Fordsons. About the only thing that took care of the orchards and the horses. And the T-Track was really the first crawler until the... And then they didn't sell many. They hold 2 tons. No other crawler was in here or at Wenatchee. So we just sold them as Model Ks about as fast as we could ship them in here.
Well, that would be a natural. But so you were manufacturing and also had the retail stores, both retail
That's
stores.
Right.
Yeah, come on, Wenatchee.
Yeah.
All right. Then did Harry, does he have any family left in Yakima?
No, he had never married.
Okay.
Luckily in that respect, maybe.
Well, he was only about 31 years old.
29.
Oh, 29. He was younger. That's why.
Yeah,
you're younger.
Younger, see.
Right. And then killed in an automobile accident.
Yeah. He'd had a Chrysler Roadster, low down, racy. And his friend up there in the dealership, I think his name was at Ellensburg, the Model A in 1930 came out in 29, in 29, and Zeke Galen. I think he still is running it for the Kelleher people up there. Zeke Galen and Harry were good friends. So Zeke took in his Chrysler Roadster, and he bought a new Model A sedan. He'd had it about a week. And on Wells Cooley Road up there on loose gravel, he went over the bank. We didn't find him for 2 days, nearly 3 days, I guess.
My Lord, that traded in on Model A.
Well, it was so much more top heavy than he's.
Yeah.
That was because he was a good driver. And funny thing, I was supposed to meet him up the Canadian line. And we were going up into Canada because we had a dealer up at Penticton. And on Monday, he was going to call me. He didn't call on Monday, didn't call on Tuesday, so I started calling over there. And Al, I forget his last name, was running a place, but he said, he's supposed to call in. He hasn't called in. He said, I'm really worried. And within about an hour after I'd called, Al called back, but he said, they found Harry. What happened is when he'd gone off the road atop this big grade, the car rolled down and threw him out, and he had a huge gash. He bled to death, but the doctor said that he'd have been a vegetable had he lived, if they had found him in time. And a doctor with his two little daughters were in the back. They were in the back of the car, and he was driving down this road, and they looked down, Daddy, there's a car down there. And he stopped and looked down. He could see it, so he went on down to the bottom of the hill. The Blackburns had on the lake or something up there. I've never been up there. I had no wish to ever go up there. And Harry had supper. He was very popular. He'd go out, and the ranchers would take him in to lunch. And if he was late, they'd take him and give him. Of course, you did those things in those days that you don't do now. And he'd been to the Blackburns for supper. And left there after dark, but he knew the road. And so he went down and told the Blackburns, which had a home and a boat landing, and he's also an orchardist. That's the reason Harry knew it.